You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent Magazine. This time around in Transform Masters, we're going to deal with the topic of influence, reason being that one of the main issues that was flagged to us by leaders who applied for the program was how to tackle those difficult one-to-one conversations with team members and how to handle the nerves in any type of meeting situation. Julie Masters is someone that has spent a career decoding influence. She's the founder of Ode Management, the world's largest dedicated speaker management agency, and is also the founder and CEO of Influence Nation, working with business leaders and organizations to help them become the voice of authority in their respective spaces. In this session, Julie has tips on how to own the first 2 minutes of any meeting and why that's necessary, why the rule of threes matters, and why gravity is much more important than confidence, and so much more. These tips from Julie can apply to presentations, staff meetings, one-to-ones, and even listing presentations. I hope you enjoy the session with Julie.
Transform Masters 2017 is brought to you by Elite Agent with thanks to Property Tree, realestate.com.au, and Real Plus.
Let's kick off. I want to talk about the first 2 minutes of any presentation. If you practice anything when it comes to your presentation or conversation, I want you to always practice the first 2 minutes. Now, how will you know when you practice the first 2 minutes enough? You will know because you will eradicate ums. So ums just happen when your brain is looking for a pause and some time to think about what you're going to say next. All the ums will disappear if you've practiced enough. So in those first two minutes, I will make a decision about whether you're credible. I will make a decision about whether you're an authority. I will make a decision about whether you're somebody that I feel I should be giving my time to in terms of my attention. Now, attention, as you guys know, is the most valuable asset, the most valuable currency I have to spend. So I make all of those decisions in the first 2 minutes. Now, if you're not bulletproof in those first 2 minutes, it's going to take you a really long time to win me back. So in those first 2 minutes, the first thing you need to set up is energy. So however you do that, if you're doing it from a stage, you can use music. You could use a video. Anything that's going to get that room into the state that you want them to be before you go. In a one-on-one interaction, from an energy point of view, you've got to bring it. You've got to own that energy. So how you walk in, the way you set up the conversation. So I was talking to Gavin Rubenstein this week. And he was saying that when he walks into a vendor presentation, the first thing he says is, let's go, let's have a look around, we'll have a quick chat, and then I'll get out of your hair. Now, what he's done is he's set a tone, and he's set an energy for what's going to happen next. And also what he's done is he's owned a space. He's walked in, he's claimed a space, and he's, I'm going to hold your hand, we're going to do this, this, and this. Don't worry, I've done this before, and then I'll get out of your hair. So you own the energy. Now, if you don't feel like you've got energy, you have to do everything you can before you get to that interaction to claim it. Have any of you seen a presentation, a TED talk by Amy Cuddy? No? Check it out. It's probably one of the most watched TED talks, I think. You're going to laugh, but basically all the research and all the neuroscience points towards if you stand like Superman / Superwoman, for I think it's 2 minutes, in a toilet, wherever you've got it, all the wiring in your brain starts pumping adrenaline and sets your system up to own it. So check out, it's called PowerPoint posing. Check that out. Personally, I don't often have the room to be able to stand up. I usually just use music. So pick a song that pumps you or a song that gets you into the right headspace, and always listen to it beforehand. So that gets your energy set up. The next thing that you want to do, so there's three things that are important in the first 2 minutes. One is energy. The second one is intention. So with intention, what's the one thing you need to decide, the one thing that you want them to do, feel, or believe differently as a result of this conversation or presentation? You need to get absolutely clear on that upfront. And all of your dealings need to come back around to that one thing. You need to open with it. My intention today, tonight, over this next hour is, and you need to close with it. So what is your one thing? Often we go in, we want them to understand too many things. We want them to understand, you know, I have 5 points of differentiation from my competitors. I have 3 things I need you to know. I have, you know, 5 accolades. All of those things are important, but they get lost. You need to be so clear on your one thing. The one thing, if you take one thing out of this, I want it to be this. I am on your side. I am, you know, the number one real estate agent in this industry. I will get a higher price for you than anybody else. What is that one thing? Get clear on that. The third thing that you need to sort out in these first 2 minutes is what I would call elephants. So whatever room you walk into, there's going to be a number of, if you're lucky, there's one. If you're unlucky, there's more than one elephant sat in that room. And what I mean by an elephant is it's an assumption, an idea, a story, an energy that was there before you got there, and you need to get it out of the way so that people can hear you. So, for example, for those of you who have seen Chris Helder, and for those you're hopefully going to watch the videos that are sent through, he has an American accent. And so when he gets on stage, what's the first thing that you think every audience member in Australia does when they see Chris Helder speak? As soon as they hear an American accent, they shut down. And so what's the first thing he does in the first 2 minutes is he said, who here has noticed that I have a slight American accent? Whole room put up their hand. Who here is tired of listening to Americans talk? Everybody laughs. The elephant has gone. Now, all of your elephants are going to be different. It might be that it's last thing at night, and I know you're tired, and you've probably had a hectic day. That might be the energy elephant that's in the room. It might be a story about real estate in general. It might be a worry. I'm not an expert in your realm, but I can guarantee you that there are going to be some elephants in that room that you need to move out of the way so that you can be heard. Because unless you move them, they just sit in the front cortex of my attention, and it stops me from being able to hear you. So 3 things, energy, intention, and elephants. You need to get those things done in the first 2 minutes. And you need to be so good at those 2 minutes, so bulletproof with those 2 minutes, that I am in automatically. So that's your first 2 minutes. Start with energy. Second thing, intention. Intention stops story. So I'll give you a personal example. My husband and I, he's frustrated me for some reason. What will happen is I'll have a story in my head that he just does that just to annoy me. Now, rationally, I know that he doesn't, but in my head, there's this story. If he uses the language, my intention is, it cuts story. So as soon as he says, you know, my intention is just to be here. You know, my intention is just to listen to you and figure out what's going on. I can't do story while someone's doing intention. It's impossible. So intention comes next, and then you move any elephants that might be in the room. So then you've got it set. You've got the energy, you've got the state, you've got an intention for the next 10 minutes, 15 minutes, however long you guys have got. And you've got rid of anything that's going to be a distraction out of that. So next I want to talk about the power of 3. 3 points. So usually the way that our brains are wired is we're just set up to remember the number 3. I don't know why. I've heard various different theories. None of them have really sounded that true. However, I do know that it works. So 3 things we're set up to remember. If you go over 3 things, I'll probably still remember 3 things. It'll just depend on which 3 I remember. We are automatically wired to remember odd numbers. One of the theories is that it stops your brain from sitting on the fence. So if I give you even numbers, your brain will go one way or another with it. Whereas if I give you an odd number, it can't go one way or the other, so it remembers them all. Who knows? I'm not a neuroscientist. So the power of 3. You need to know what your 3 things are, the three points that you want to make before you go into a presentation. What are the 3? And I know you probably all sat there going, there's so many points and they're all very important. And I'm sure that they are. But you have to understand that you're walking into a room where people have very limited bandwidth, regardless of the room you're walking into. And they just don't have the bandwidth to remember a lot. So get really clear on your three points. And you'll notice politicians do it. It's called the rule of 3. So they'll say it again, and then they'll tell you that they said it. They'll go into every press conference with 3 points they want to make. So it's tried and tested. What are your 3? With every 3, you need to back each one of those up with what I would call epic storytelling. So every 3 you need to bring alive. So it might be one of the points you want to make might be statistical, it might be facts, it might be figures. You know, we don't tend to remember facts and figures as human beings. We're storytelling creatures. You know, how many times have you sat over a beer or a wine with a friend and relived some statistics? You just don't. You relive stories. You retell stories. So stories stick because we have an emotional connection to stories. So using epic storytelling means that I've got my 3 points and I've got a story that brings each of those 3 points to life. Now, it might be a case study. It might be an example. Or it might be what's called a metaphor, which is this is like, and then you compare it to something else. This is a bit like a game of football, if you're talking to a guy. It's a bit like a game of football. It's a game of two halves. You know, there's a goalie. So whatever stories you think are going to get the most emotional traction with the people that you're trying to reach. Recently, I was watching a David Attenborough documentary, and he was talking about being right at the bottom of the ocean. And he was saying, you know, I'm not going to be able to do his voice, by the way. He said, right at the bottom of the ocean, like a million leagues under the sea, 2 million tons of pressure. And I was just like, mm-hmm. He said, it sounds like a lot. Sounds big. And then he said, it's a bit like holding a 2-ton truck on your finger. Now, that's the power of a story. That's the power of a metaphor, because suddenly I went, oh, now I have a whole sensation of what that's like. Now it means something to me. It's put it in a context that I understand. The other thing that tends to happen with stories is that whenever I tell you a story, your body and your brain automatically is wired to put yourself as the lead character in that. And that's what we call empathy. So I tell a story, you make yourself the lead character, you feel what I would feel, you think what you think the lead character's thinking, and then you feel a sense of empathy. That's how we build empathy. Stories are the core of empathy. And so if you want someone to emotionally connect with you in the case that you're making, you have to tell a story. That's the only route in to emotion. So you need to master storytelling. Now, mastering storytelling, again, you don't have to get up and act it out and do various different characters and all of that kind of stuff. You just need to pick one that's real for you. You make it real, make it personal, make it compelling. So it could be one of your past clients. You're going to be able to tell that story in a way that sounds very real because you were there. Make it a story from your own life. Make it a story from your family's life, but you've got to make it real. Personal is better because we relate so much better to personal stories. There's a vulnerability and an authenticity that happens there when we tell a personal story that people really buy into. It kind of lets us in under the radar. And if at that point, which I'm sure you are, you're looking very, you know, schmicked and suited, and there is a chance that you feel kind of untouchable, which is important because you need to look like you own this. But there's also a moment where I actually want to feel like you get me, you know? You understand the position I'm in, you understand the emotions that I'm going through, and storytelling is your way into that. So you've got 3 points, each of those, some kind of story, some kind of metaphor, some kind of case study that backs that up. On the back of that, I want to talk about closing and closing on purpose. So closing on purpose, what I mean by that is what we often tend to do when we're closing, talking yourself out of the business. That's the lack of a powerful close. Because what happens is you do your thing, and then there's this pause, and then you get really nervous, and you're like, oh my God, what are they thinking? And so you just try and fill in the gaps so that they don't have a chance to think. Closing on purpose is one of the thing that I see missed the most. And I see it all the time with speakers, where I call it like the one-night stand version of a close, which is where you do your presentation, and then you go, okay, thank you and good night. And then you run off and just, you know, don't swap phone numbers, don't call me, I'm just glad I got out of here. So you need to take a breath and close with awareness and close with intention. Now, there's 3 different types of closing that you can do. One is an information close. The information close is where basically you just relist everything you've been through, your 3 points. So your intention and your 3 points. Today we've covered this, this, this. Do you have any questions over those things? Was anything unclear? Did I leave any kind of loops unclosed that you've kind of got at the front of your mind there that you want to cover off? And notice I use very human language. So it's important that you use very human language, because often when we don't, if you say something like any questions, what's the first thing that someone says if you say any questions? I've done it. You'll go, no. No. So any questions, guaranteed to get no questions. You want to start using more human language, which is there anything just kind of, you know, that you can feel bubbling away in your brain there that you think it would be great if I clarified? Is there anything that you can feel like needs a little bit more exploration? Start using more human language and you will get some questions. But if you say any more questions, you won't get any. So the information close. Repeat what you've said. Make sure that you've got out any final bits that are just sticking in their brain. The second one is the what we call the emotion close, which is where you actually close with a story, a relevant story. So it could be, for example, I was working with a client recently. This happened, and then this happened, and then we had this fantastic result, and it was just down the road. And you know, I'm leaving here, and I'm gonna go have dinner with them after I've left you. And you know, I really would love to be able to replicate that for you. I learned so much during that process, and we got such a great response. I would love to be able to use those lessons that we learned and just go full steam ahead for you guys. So that's called an emotion close. That's when you close with storytelling. And again, it's because story is the only way into emotion. The third one is what we would call a request. So you finish with a request, and this is where we talk about powerful closing. And so the request is, I would like to invite you to, you know, think about this more and get back in touch with me within 24 hours. That's probably not as powerful as it needs to be. That's more one that you can use on the stage because it's softer. But if you're in a one-on-one, it's just called asking for the business. It's called making a clear request. Am I able to get started on this for you now? Is there anything that would stop us getting started tomorrow? I'm really excited. How quickly do you think that you're able to get the paperwork across to me? Actually finishing with a clear, concise question. Now, I know in the real estate industry, because I do a fair amount of work in it, there are tons of scripts available. There are tons of people that have amazing languaging for this stuff. Find it, learn it, make a clean and clear request at the end, and then you just have to stop and give them chance to take a breath. And that's where it's called, in my business, it's called not trampling over yourself. And you'll see it with comedians. Comedians are the master of it. You'll notice, next time you watch a comedian, notice that when they want you to laugh, they shut up. And sometimes I've seen comedians like shut up for a really long, the room's not laughing, they just stay quiet. And the room's still not laughing and they still stay quiet. And the whole thing is, you know, this gets funnier the longer I don't talk. And eventually, the audience joins in. You have to give people space. So don't trample all over yourself. Deliver the line and then just give it some space. Now, they're very welcome to say, actually, I think we need to talk about it. Or they're very welcome to say, I'll get back to you within 24 hours. But the more you can own the pauses and own the silences, the more you own the space. There's an authority that comes with being comfortable enough to say, I'm going to give you some time to breathe. Or I'm going to give you some time to digest this. And we would call it the power of the pause. So even when you're giving a presentation, take a breath. Give people some time to actually think about what you've just said. And the more you know, I talked about that gravity feeling, the more you ground down and you have a sense of gravity, the more comfortable you are just to deliver a story or deliver a point, and then just breathe for a second and then carry on. So letting there be the spaces, your authority kind of almost lives in the spaces between the words. And the next time you see someone and you think that they have gravity or you think that they have authority, I just want you to watch what they do with their body. I want you to watch what they do with their language and watch what they do with their pauses. Because I guarantee you the most influential people I know are a master of the pause. So just getting really comfortable with that. I find one of the biggest things that people get nervous about when it comes to personal influence is when they start talking back. It's all very good and well when you're talking, but when they start talking back, you know, stuff gets a little bit terrifying. in neurolinguistic programming, there are three positions. There's first position, second position, and third position. Now, if you're a top class UN negotiator, you have to learn to live in what's called third position. First position, you know you're in first position when all you can hear is the voices inside your own head. So first position is when I'm all about me. Not in a bad way, I'm just all about me. I'm listening to the voices inside my head. I'm very aware of what my body's doing. I'm very aware of how I'm feeling. And I'm almost kind of shut off to any other stimulus. We get into first position when we're angry. First position is basically there for fight or flight. Because if you're going to run away from a big bear, you'd better be like fully ready. So there's first position, and it's very hard to hear anybody when you're in first position. And then there's second position. And second position is when you're all about somebody else. You're totally tuned into them. You're watching what they're doing. You're picking up on their body language. Now, that sounds like the best place to be, and it's actually not the best place to be. Because what happens is you can derail yourself then. So if I'm just staring at you, the second you do anything, like fold your arms, look down a little, if I'm in second position, my brain's going to start going, what's she doing? Why did she just fold her arms? What happened then? Oh my God, I think I've lost her. Oh, that's it. I'm never doing this again. And we start to go nervous. So we're way too connected in to an individual. Third position, on the other hand, is when you're in helicopter mode. When you're in helicopter mode and you're just paying attention to the room. So you're listening and you're like, what's needed now? You know, she might have just crossed her arms because she's tired or she's had a bad day. I can hear the voice chattering in the back of my mind, but I'm not paying any attention. I'm just really tuned in to what's needed right now. And that involves deep listening. So really deep, active listening. Now, you'll know that you're doing deep, active listening if you use clarification questions. So I noticed that you said this. I really want to understand that because it seems important to you. Can you reword it for me? Or can you explain it to me in a different way? That's when someone feels very heard. Because not only did you hear me enough to repeat my language back to me, but you care enough to want to make sure that you got it right. So deep listening, clarification questions, acknowledgement, that all happens in third position. You can't do that in first position. So the way to get yourself out of first position is to listen deeply and start picking up on the language. Make it an experiment. Make it a game in your head. Okay, I'm going to completely pick up on their language in here so that I can repeat it back and make sure that I've got it right. That's how you get yourself out of first. The other flip side of first, second, third position is when you're actually dealing with somebody that's in first position. So you're in third position, you're in a really good space, you're keeping an eye on everything, you're monitoring your state, you're monitoring their state, you're not attached to either of them, you're just figuring out where we need to go as two people. Then you've got someone else who's in first position because they're angry or something's gone on with their day and you're struggling to get them out of it. And raise your hand if you've ever been in a position where you've gone into a room and you think, have I just walked into something? I do not know what's going on here. Yeah, you know when you like cut the atmosphere with a knife, that thing? So that's what's needed there is what we call breaking state. So there's a state in that room and you need to break it in order to be heard. Now, various different ways to break somebody's state. It sounds very, very macho, breaking somebody's state. It's not. To break somebody's state, you just need to find them. And if any of you have got kids, you'll be very familiar with how you do that. Like, how do you find, if a child is in state, first position, screaming, crying, having a tantrum, how do you break their state? To break somebody's state, you need to find them. And so with kids, what we do is you put them on your knee, you tend to actually come to their level. You ask them questions. Asking questions is an excellent way to break state. Because if I ask you a question, it's very hard to be in my head if I'm trying to answer your question. So asking questions. Asking personal questions, another great way, because it's hard for me to answer a personal question on autopilot. You know, things like how was your day, and I can answer those on autopilot, but questions I'm not able to answer on autopilot. Other ways to break state is to sit down and be like simple things like be sideways on with somebody, so that you're not front on, but you're sideways on. And that tends to work with children as well, because you're not, if they're angry, you're not eye to eye, which is when your adrenaline starts pumping. You're actually, you're next to them. So that there's a comfort to having someone there, but you're not in their face. The other one is just to hear somebody. And to, I don't know how appropriate this would be. I've never done a vendor meeting, although I've certainly witnessed many. To say to someone, you know, it feels like there's a lot going on at the moment. Is that, does that feel true? Again, the same way you would with a child, because, you know, our emotions are our emotions. We just get better able at hiding them. You know, I feel like there's something going on at the moment. Is that true? Does that feel true? And they'll go, do you know what? Yeah. My mum's in hospital. I'm really struggling to think. You go, okay, so what would work for you? Would it work for you if we rescheduled? Would it work for you if I just cut to the chase? Would it work for, what do you need right now? Because I'm here to be of service to you. So breaking state, your ability to own your own state and get in state, and your ability to break state are really important if you're going to up your influence. Practice trying to break someone's state, and you'll find that it's really hard to stay in state if someone's trying to get you out of it. It's actually really difficult if somebody is actively trying to connect with you. We're connective creatures. We find it difficult not to connect if someone's inviting us. It's hard to stay angry if somebody's actually listening, acknowledging, and trying to connect with us. Pat the dog, compliment the house, whatever you can do to break the mood that somebody may or may not. And if they're in a great mood, you don't need to do it. You just get straight into it. The other thing about feedback is to remember to take it seriously and not personally. So if somebody gives you, if you're doing a presentation and you get negative feedback for whatever reason, or you think you might, you're in first position and you're thinking that they're giving you negative feedback in their head, you need to take it seriously and not personally. Personally is when you derail yourself, and seriously is when you learn. So somebody might be questioning your information, but they are not questioning your right to give that information. And that's where we start taking it personally. We start to think that someone's questioning our right to give the information, that whole who do you think you are question. To take something seriously is to go, I have every right to give this information. Is this the right information? Is this information, is the way I'm delivering it helpful? Is the content helpful? Could I learn something? And that's when you'll get better and better and better and better. But if you start taking it personally, it's a downward slope from there. So seriously, not personally. The question, who do you think you are? I can tell you from personal experience that, you know, I work with a lot of CEOs and I work with global thought leaders who get up and speak in front of thousands of people and write books, and politicians and a lot of different types of people. And every single one of them would ask themselves that question at least 3 times a day. And if you had a bottle of wine with them, would tell you all about it. So I have come to believe that your ability to be able to answer that question is probably the biggest difference between whether you will step up and own your space or whether you won't. So if you take it as a given that that question is going to come up, either in your head or if you post something online and somebody with a random anonymous handle writes something back, you know, the subtext of which is always going to be, who do you think you are? You need to have already answered that question in your head. So Who do I think I am? I think I am the leading real estate agent in my area. I think I am an expert in this, this, and this. I think I am the hardest working, most resourceful, most relentless real estate agent on my patch. You need to be able to answer it for yourself. Because if you can't answer it for yourself, when it comes up, it's going to derail you. So make sure you answer that question first and you're really clear on it. And then if it comes up in whatever form it comes up on, I mean, I know some of you, I recognize some of you, and I know some of you have got a good following, and I'm sure that you have those moments where something gets written and you have that moment of, oh, even if it's only like a millisecond, you know, you have that kind of, oh, ouch moment, or, oh, maybe I shouldn't post as much. Maybe I should post differently. Maybe I should da 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 da. All those questions, exactly the same question. Who do you think you are? Exactly the same question, just in different formats. So make sure you answer that question. Is probably the biggest influence piece of advice that I can give you, other than the technical tools. I just want to talk about the difference between certainty and confidence very quickly again. To speak with certainty and to be certain are two different things. I don't want you going out there feeling like you've got to be certain. To be certain is to be inflexible. To be certain is you don't take on any feedback. to speak with certainty means that I go into a room. So I'm here with you today. You know, I've put an hour aside of my time to give you the best of what I've got today. And I will speak with certainty, as in the best of what I have in terms of my information and my experience, I will give you in this hour. Now, if I find something else out tomorrow that turns out I was wrong, so be it. I will change my mind. I'll pivot. I'll take it on board and I'll change. But if I'm so focused on trying to be certain, I'm closed off from feedback. I'm closed off from anybody asking any questions because I really don't want anyone to rock my boat. So speaking with certainty and being certain, two different things. You want to focus on speaking with certainty. And that means that you go into any room with any vendor with the mindset of, I'm going to give you the best I've got. All my experience with everything I know, with everything I've done, I'm going to give you the best I've got in this moment. And if you can do that, I promise you, you will speak with certainty.
Well, that's it for this session. And remember, we're delighted to have Julie Masters along at our event, How to Lead a Winning Team in 2018, where she will be talking on the subject of how to dominate online in a new age of influence. For tickets, visit eliteagent.com.au/win2018. Catch you again soon for some more insights from this year's Transform series. To keep up with all the latest information from Transform, visit eliteagent.com.au/transform. I'm Samantha McLean. Thanks for joining in, and we will see you soon.
Transform Masters 2017 is brought to you by Elite Agent, with thanks to Property Tree, realestate.com.au and Real Plus. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.